overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So I invite you to enter into the breath within the breath. To experience the givingness of life to itself in every holy instant of now. And so by putting our attention on something as simple and humble as the breath, we begin to realize that it's breathing us. And it sustains life. And so the gift of putting our attention on something as humble and as benign as the breath is that it stops the mind from its endless chore to think and ponder and conclude and worry and judge. In this holy instant of now, all of that stops. And we experience the grace of one simple breath. Hildegard of Bingen says, sigh for the divine, something as simple as that. So I invite you to take a deep inhalation and sigh for the divine. The alchemy of a sigh. One more time. Take a deep integrating breath. And with a sigh, let go of whatever it is you need to let go of. Isn't that nice? Doesn't that feel good? To enter into our body in a conscious way so that we're not being bounced around by patterns of consciousness that would have us react or be in a struggle with control, trying to control what is. Paradoxically, when we let go of control, we enter into a flow. A flow of being. I'll even expand that, a flow of love. This Sunday, I'm going to explore the idea that there is only love. A love that heals, a love that sets us free. There is only love. It says in the book of John, God is love. And when we open to this love, we experience it intimately as our own self. The Sufis call it the axis of love that moves through all creation. Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind said, all is love and all is law. He says, let the love lead the way and then the law will make the way possible. And so this month of August, we're going to explore the alchemy of love and of light. And alchemy is that dynamic within all creation that would have us shift out of lead into gold, out of the egoic, struggling part of life into the soulful surrender and ease of being. It says in the Bible, choose you this day who you will serve. Are you going to serve God, the love, or are you going to serve mammon, the stuff of life? And so we're a choice point. In every breath, we can choose to stop the anxiety of the mind and open to the grace of the breath. It's that simple, and it's that profound. There is only love, a love that heals, a love that sets us free. And I choose in this holy instant of now to open to that experience in an alchemical way, knowing that this love heals us. And the love is freely given through grace. And with that, we open our eyes and we smile. Because sometimes too much thought around it can complicate it, and it doesn't need to be thought, it needs to be felt. In the Sufi tradition, they say you have to feel your way into the truth. And when beautiful Bob shows up and plays that music, and you know, he should be in bed by now because he was up till midnight at a gig, but his beautiful heart brought him in here so that he could set the tone by playing those preludes where his heart opened and he was in a flow of transmission. And then you begin to realize all of life is a transmission. There is a transmitter. It's all transmitting. You call it the trees transmitting. There is that which is transmitted. What if everything is transmitting love? Well, there is a beautiful thought. Ashley, love's coming from the trees. Love is coming from the penguin. Love is coming from my little pug. You know, it's just all love. And then when you wake up, you begin to realize I've been lost in the far country, and now I'm choosing to discover that something that binds us together in that something bigger. I was telling Michael that I found this book in my bookcase called Love is Stronger Than Death, and it's a love story about a 70-year-old monk who met an Episcopal priest, a woman of 50, and they fell in the unio mystico. They fell in this mystical union, the agape love. They became one. And they developed this intimacy through prayer and through meditation. And then he just goes up and dies. And then she is asked to have a relationship after death with the love that never died. And so this whole book is about this relationship between this monk and this woman that, in a love that was stronger than death. Whoa, that seems kind of strange, Adam. And yet if you've experienced the death of form, well, then you get to ask the question, what doesn't die? And I always go back to the love doesn't die. The Sufis also say, you come here, you incarnate with light, and you incarnate with love. And when you leave this mortal coil, you take the light with you, but you leave the love behind. Now, so this morning when I get to church, I get here so darn early, and I see that teddy bear that reminds me of my dog, Bert. And I had some time to kill, so I went on the phone and I clicked on one of those pictures of Bert, and it was a narrative of David in the garden, showing all the flowers that were blooming. I was sending it apparently to my sister in Oregon. And throughout this video, as I move around with my little camera in the garden, there's the old white dog following me around. And I go out to the pond. That's when I still had a lot of fish instead of just Napoleon. And I'm looking at the fish in the pond. And then all of a sudden, I hear this strange sound behind the garden gate. And there was Bert. He'd followed me all around. And he was coming in the gate again. And all of a sudden, tears are coming down my eyes. And I realized that love is stronger than death. And I had to have my own personal experience of it on Sunday morning. So it couldn't just be a theory of the mind. It had to be a direct felt knowing. So what if in spirituality, it's about experiencing the alchemy of it? Hopefully, when you come to the center, you're going to have a direct experience of love. It's not going to be a conceptual talk about love. It's going to be a felt experience of that which binds us together in that something bigger. And you know, the Greeks, they talked about love as agape love, which is this spiritual love, because there's something invisible that's within and all around. They talk about the philos love, which is the love of friend and family, which is a beautiful one with each other. And then they talk about the eros love, which is the physical, passionate, creative love that sometimes we confuse for love, that physical something that can be so sticky, we get stuck in it sometimes. And then you hear Rumi saying, what you think of love are but subtle degrees of domination and servitude. And that's that sticky love with expectation, attachment, and resistance. He says, but true love, the love that we're talking about today, comes fully formed like the moonlight in the window. And then Rumi says, all swimming in this ocean of love ends up in drowning. Whoa, then what happens to me? Well, I guess you don't exist anymore. All that's left is the love. And then we come together in that love. We bind our hearts and minds. And then we get to discover, then what? Then what? Then what? How then shall we live? I went back to the source of religious science, to Ernest Holmes. And we have this book in the bookstore, 365 Days, where he does prayer for 365 days in the year. And he talks about light and he talks about love. And that's what we're talking about this month, the alchemy of light and love. And we're going to be doing a circle of love in October, Adam. I've got a little flyer out there, and it's going to be, per my choice, called The Alchemy of Light, because I want that experience, as this experience, to be something that you feel into, that can shift you into a different way of approaching life. No longer the anxieties are going to run the show anymore. There's going to be this command center, a default mechanism, and I'm going to come from love and light, and they're in charge. So this is what Ernest Holmes says. He says this. Now this light that you are, he says, the Old Testament refers to a light that's always shining over the altar of the temple. And this light, of course, is a symbol for life that was never extinguished. Ha. And he says, know this light. There is such a light at the center of everything. The lumina naturae, Llewellyn called it, and the lumina dei, the same light. This is the divine stuff for which we were all made. And there is nothing outside of the light. Everything exists within it. Well, I can let your light shine, Miss Barbara. There is a light at the center of everyone. It is never obliterated, but it does seem that it is often obscured for various reasons. Jesus said never to put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. So, Ernest Holmes concludes, love and light flow in and through me, and in that I give thanks for the radiance of spirit that's always operating from the control center of the true self, and that's what we are. So you see that alchemy, the shift from the neurotic, crazy person to the sane, peaceful, loving, luminous aspect of self. And then in the next little page, on the next day, his prayer for that day is, deep within me dwells infinite love. Well, he's going from the light to the love. He says, all the love there is right here, right now, as me. And I now cease all self-opposition. You know, that's what we get to sometimes. We're self-opposing because we so identify with our problem. But, you know, spirit doesn't have the problem. In the Sufi tradition, they say, give Allah, or God, the one thing that Allah does not have. Well, what would the one thing that Allah doesn't have? Your problem. Could you be willing to give your problem to this something and then suffer the consequences? Well, I guess I'd be free, Susan. I wouldn't be struggling with my stuff. I was going to use a different word, but I won't use it in church. I hear only the voice of love speaking to me, he says. I hear nothing but the words of wisdom, with a big W, guiding and inspiring me. And when I listen, there is a response from something greater than myself. It is the mysterious energy of love itself, the active principle of oneness and unity. And everything loves, and everything responds to love. It is the universal quality, shared alike by all. It's the central flame of the universe. Wow. Well, that seems pretty big, Zach. It's the central flame of the universe, and it flows everywhere with equanimity. It doesn't favor the ones that have been saved versus the ones that are lost. I was reading Jeff Foster's book, Falling in Love with Where You Are, and he takes love to another level. He says, he calls it a dirty love. Oh, that one kind of shocked me, Susan. And he says, because this love likes to go and face the dirty parts of ourself. It doesn't want your perfect, pure, saved, good little girl, Miss Mary. No, it wants your wounded, fearful, troubled, crazy self, because this love is so big that it wants to embrace the all of us. So he says, what if we could offer it our fear and our anxiety and our confusion and our uncertainty, and know that as we surrender that, that need to be in control and have all the answers, when we surrender that to this flow of love, by its very nature, it doesn't have the answers because it doesn't have the question, because it is the answer itself, and then it begins to reclaim you as itself. Well, that kind of feels good, you know? And then Jeff Foster talks about this love as the divine mother, as the divine father, as the guru within. Anything you could imagine that this divine love would be, it is. And it's available to us, especially in those times when we're walking on the side of the highway, our car's just been hit by an asshole, and we don't know where we're going. That's when we open to that love. Because it's always there. It's waiting for us. It lies stretched in smiling repose. Where? Right here, at the core of your being. It's not outside of yourself. I shared with the Revealing Service that my prayer partner in Canada, they have the four principles of what they stand for at their Center for Spiritual Living in White Rock, British Columbia. It's not a very complicated list of things that they stand for. The first one is that all there is God. Or you could say all there is love. All there is this one power, endlessly revealing itself. Well, that's a really big idea. The second one is, what was the second one? Oh, that we're spiritual beings, which means spirit was never born and spirit never dies, yet we're having a human experience. So could we, as spiritual beings, open to this human experience in kind of a sane sort of way? So when the stuff of life shows up that wants to trip us up, that wants to have us spiral out in reaction, we can see it from that command center, from that default mechanism of pure awareness, instead of conclusions and thoughts and strategies and the need to be in control and to be safe and all that stuff that gets you all. Could we find that still point that says, I don't know and I don't have to know, because there's something greater within me that does know. And I yield, I surrender to that flow of love, knowing that that flow of love will heal whatever it is that I present to it. So yes, we're spiritual beings. Play with that. We're soulful beings. Richard Rohr wrote a little book called Falling Upward, and it's about the two halves of life. The first half of life is all about the individual, being a success, having goals, getting degrees, becoming a somebody. And then the second half is going back into your nobody training, where you realize it wasn't about the ego, it wasn't about the achievements, it wasn't about the material acquisition. It was about becoming a conduit for this love and this awareness that's so much bigger, that connects us all in kind of a universal mind, not a local mind. And that's the challenge. So we're spiritual beings, we're divine beings, and that's awakening. That's that second phase. The third thing that they present at their center is, I find this one interesting, nothing on the outside of life has any power over us unless we give it power over us. In other words, the world is not responsible for your well-being. So then we stop projecting onto the world for their validation, for their approval, for a reflection. Am I enough? Am I enough? We don't look outside of ourselves anymore because we found this command center that says, I love myself just the way I am. There's nothing I need to change. Oh, and the third one is, and there's nothing you need to change in order for you to know the wholeness of your being. Well, I thought I had to change. What if you don't have to change? You just get to open. And then the last one is, I think this is kind of sweet. We're all on a journey home. And as Rumi says, we are walking each other home. And I love that that was their fourth one. But I said, but where we differ in Huntsville is we say, and I have arrived. I am home. So what if you know that that place called home is that place that you take refuge in, Ashley, that was saying, well, you finally came home. And then you find, my God, I'm at peace. I sleep the full night through because I found home was a place. Remember at the end of Wizard of Oz, they said, what have you learned, Dorothy? You gotta wake up yourself. You can't tell people this. And I remember Dorothy saying, and I'm a little kid watching this, I learned never to look any further than your own backyard, because that would be right here. Because if you haven't found it here, you never really lost it to begin with. Is that it? She said. Oh, that's it, said Glenda. Well, why didn't you tell me? She said. Because you wouldn't have believed me if I had. You had to make the great discovery for yourself. And at age 6, 7, 8, 9, I heard this again and again and again and again. It's the same with spirituality. You have to make this discovery for yourself. The kingdom of heaven is within you. It's not a geographical place that you get if you're a good little boy and Santa gives you the naughty and nice list and you're on the naughty or the nice list. Now, Zach, I doubt if you'd be on the nice list. I got a feeling there's a naughty boy in you. I can see it in the twinkle in your eyes. And the good news is God doesn't care. Yeah, I got you. And then we can realize that God loves all her children. And that we're all invited into this kingdom of heaven. And it's not a geographical location, but it's a state of consciousness. And then you read the Gospel of Thomas, where Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is spread out upon the earth, but we don't see it. That it's all the lumina dei. It's all the light of the one in nature and in all creation. And then we begin to experience a sense of spiritual ecology. You know, my teacher, and they all live within you. One of the strongest ones of all is Llewellyn von Lee. He was the Sufi teacher. And what was so grace-filled with me and him was that he was a student of Carl Jung, and he got his PhD in Jungian psychology. But that took him into an exploration of the shadow. And it was in the exploration of the shadow that he found the light. And so what if that through grace and through his Jungian studies, and through the studies of dreams, he awoke to this light that was inherent within himself, and through grace, he attracted a woman named Irena Tweedy, a Sufi teacher from India. She was a student of Baisab, this ancient Sufi of the Naqshbandi tradition, and once she became Llewellyn's teacher, then Baisab, who had transitioned, talk about love being stronger than death, Baisab became his teacher. And he says, Baisab would teach me on these other dimensions of reality. And he was having an experience of the oneness through the teacher, because the teacher lives in you, even if the teacher is dead when you come across the teacher. Sounds crazy? Well, it was the perfect one for me. And so we taught this class last time, and he talks about the axis of love as something that's very real and that is necessary for the salvation of humanity. He's moved since from being a Sufi teacher and a Jungian psychologist to a mission to save the planet, and his whole emphasis now is on spiritual ecology, where we have to take our role as stewards to take care of all aspects of this life that is our own life. And at the very end of his book on spiritual ecology, he says, what if we could look out at nature, the kingdom of heaven is spread out upon the earth, and we could see it all as sacred? I love that Paula has Paula Gaia in her little email. Paula for Gaia. So what if we could be for this beautiful planet of ours and see that when we see it as sacred, that very perception activates the wholeness within it? It's Ernest Holmes that says it's the perception of wholeness that's all healing. So what if we take our perception away from the perceived problem and identifying with the story around that problem? Terry Girl knows what that's all about. And we could put our perception on the wholeness that's inherent within everything. It was Thomas Merton, the great monk mystic, who said there is a hidden wholeness within all creation. So our job is to find the hidden wholeness. Now, at the end of every class, my students do projects. And one of my students for, God, 30 years was Reverend Pam Purdy. She went through my ministerial class, and she always fancied herself as a seamstress. She loves to make quilts. So every class, she would make a little quilt. This is her quilt after we did the Gnostic Gospels on love. And she wrote, love is in the heart of silence. Love is the source of grace. Love is gentle with humility. Love means embracing them all. Love is that pearl of great price. Love expands the body, the heart, and the soul. And then she says, the Gnostic experience of light takes you into the love. These are all little phrases that came from Jesus himself in the Logians. He says, and all you're seeking, he says, seek until you find. And he says, and when you find, you'll be greatly disturbed. And when you're greatly disturbed, you'll be filled with awe. And when you are filled with awe, you will have dominion over your world. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. It's the first Logian of the master teacher. Now, he was the awakened Christ, but now we're at a time when the universal Christ is awakening within humanity. And the reason you're disturbed is because it was already there, but we weren't in touch with it. So when you touched that place, Ashley, that was a sacred homecoming. That was worth more than all the classes and the books and the therapy you could have done just by going within and touching that place. It's waiting for us. So that was in her class. Oh, she said, put this on your door. You know, the love's on the outside of the door, and this is the shadow part of me. Go away. It doesn't say that I'm rejecting you. It just says, go away. I need my peace right now. So thank you, Pam. That was for the door. Then the next year, I love, this is show and tell. The next year, we were doing one of the classes, and she decided to show us the subconscious mind, the shadow part of our mind, the dark face, the demons. Anybody can relate to this part of your mind? This is the anxiety place. It even has a rip in it. I mean, it's just hell on wheels, and this exists within you. But simultaneously, underneath the appearance of that, when you lift the veil, and the Sufis say there are 70,000 veils of ignorance, and they say make sure when you lift the veils, you lift them one at a time, and whatever you do, Zach, don't rip the veil. So the veils of forgetfulness, you lift them, and you lift them, and we know that what's on the inside, on the other side, when you lift them, guess what you find? The radiant colors of the universe. The kingdom of heaven was in you all along, but you didn't know it because you were over here in this state of consciousness. And she said, this is the state that we get to cultivate, that we get to nurture. This is where the axis of love begins to flower. So could we open to that, knowing it's an ongoing adventure? I think that's enough of the show and tell. Back to Llewellyn. the axis of love. So he starts by quoting the Sufi mystics. I was going to read you a Sufi poem by Rumi, but every time I pull out that Sufi poetry, I start to sob, because they talk about letting your heart break until you're absorbed by the love and you don't exist as a separate person anymore. Now, someone is sensitive to me. When you throw me in the ocean of love, I am going to become a puddle. So I decided not to give you that form because it drove Dorothy Edwards out of here when I was dissolving every Sunday. So here's what the Sufi says, Al-Halaj. Love is the principle of existence and its cause of existence. It is the beginning of the universe, and it is what maintains the universe. Well, that's a pretty big definition, isn't it? It's the Alpha, the Omega. It's all that is. Well, there's a good title. All there is love. I think that's a good title. What do you think, Michael? So here's the axis. He says, Llewellyn, the axis of love runs through all creation, and it's carrying the energy of love in every atom and to every atom. Well, is that what we're doing, Serena? The love in me meets the love in you. The light in me meets the light in you. I think that's what we're doing here. He says the axis of love sings the song of his creation with a capital H. Now, he uses the masculine, but he says, as long as we know that God doesn't have a gender, it would be a he, she if it were. So the axis of love sings the song of his creation, the joy of his manifestation, and the real wonder of his world. It is the axis of, quote, and this is what it says in the Quran, he loves them and they love him. Well, you mean this power loves us? And then our response is to love that power? I think that's what it is, Donna. He loves them and they love him. We're in a vortex of love. You can feel into that, can't you? Do you know how much you're loved by the universe? My God, it loves the least part of you, the most vulnerable part of you. There's Jeff Foster. So the real wonder, it is the axis of he loves them and they love him, and in which all of life is a lover that is longing for their beloved. It's all longing to return to source. And when that something begins to awaken within you, it's the very love of the source wanting to reclaim you as its instrument. It's really what it is. It's the gravitational pull of his love that is holding life together, and it gives meaning and sustenance to all of creation. There's something bigger operating here, folks. And he's inviting us to enter into the axis of love in kind of a humble, surrendered way, and say yes 1,000 times yes, because I can't understand it with my mind. Because this love doesn't need safety and security and conclusions. It doesn't need labels. It doesn't need an institution for a religion. It doesn't need a Jesus. It doesn't need any of that stuff. This love includes everything and excludes nothing. And he's saying, throw yourself into that axis. It's real. He said, it's the powerful core of energy that nourishes life more than we realize. That's why I love it when Bob decides to play beautiful music before the service, because I know he enters into a space within himself where he is a channel for this creative energy. And then the invitation is when we surrender to that music, and I love to put music on in the house and let it work on me throughout the day. Do you ever, any of you do that besides me? It kind of sets up a vibrational field. And you know, I surrounded myself with flowers and music and peace and harmony. Well, now I could leave the TV on and watch Fox News and get all upset about the karma of the planet, or I could turn that off, just like the mind, and experience something that knows none of that. Find the axis of love that's waiting for you. He goes on to a little bit titchmore of Llewellyn. He says, the axis of love is most directly accessible through our heart, because the heart is our organ of divine perception and the organ of divine love. You know, when you feel that love for your pets, or for your loved ones, or for the simplest of things in life, you can kind of feel it in here, can't you? It's not a conceptual thing, it's a felt thing. He's saying that too. Through the heart, we are aligned with the center of our own being and with the axis of love that runs throughout all creation. So through those who love him, who love this presence, whose heart he has awakened, this something awakens within us. You know, you can feel it. The reason you're here is because it awoke. His love flows into the world, and the axis of love is consciously present. We're letting this divine love flow in us, through us, around us, and it's we're all sharing that same love. Isn't that fun? So when Ari walked in here, I felt the love from her and the love from me. It met in that same field. Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is a field. It's a field of light and love. And he says, and when the soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. I shouldn't even be talking about this on Sundays. I should just be radiating the presence. He says, even the idea each other does not exist. That means there aren't two. And then he says, in his beautiful, humble, profound way, I will meet you there. So when we come to meet in that field, in that axis of love. And then we're not in control, Miss Tia. You know, we're literally an opening and an outlet and an inlet for this something that is greater than us. He's pointing to that, pointing to something bigger. He says, no two ways of love are the same, but every lover lives in the same axis of love. In other words, you get to uniquely express it in your own dynamic. It's never going to be the same. You know, the universe does not like conformity and consistency. It doesn't like to make everything like everything else. No, it wants Bob to be a unique Bob Yeomans, not a David Leonard. Serena Sage has no one like her. I mean, she's crazy and wild. And isn't that beautiful? There's no Terry Boy. He's a one of a kind. Then you begin to realize, holy cow, I'm not supposed to conform. So, no two ways of love are the same, but every lover lives the same axis of love. It is alive in our hearts. It is present in each and every breath. Every breath? Every single breath, Michael? Every single breath. It is alive in our hearts. It's present in each and every breath. And when we remember him, well, then it sings within us, nourishing life in the most hidden and wonderful ways. Everything in life is a lover waiting for their beloved. Well, we're waiting for our beloved, Miss Barbara, and it's right there. The beloved is right there. It comes in all its many guises. And then your heart opens, and then compassion begins to flower. Last Christmas, the last little titch, and then I got a little story to tell you. I love Llewellyn. He says, we fulfill our part in this love affair in the simplest of ways, through relating to others with love, through cooking or cleaning with love. You know, they say the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. So are you doing the stuff of your life with love? When Gigi and I went to Istanbul to study with the Sufis, the Mevlevis, Kabir Helminski, the head of the Sufi order, said, David, it all boils down to one word, and that word is adab. And adab means respect. How you do anything. When you take your shoes off, do you kick them off or do you place them to rest? When you finish your meal, do you thank the whatever and put the plate in the washing machine? And when you feed the pug, do you put his food down and know that it's sacred? Everything, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. So he says, through relating to others with love, through cooking and cleaning with love, through living your daily life with remembrance and with awareness, which for the Sufi is the awareness of the heart. So we see his face, the face of the beloved, in the beauty of life and in the chaos of life. Miss Marie Perez, you see the beauty or the chaos. You see it in the summer sunrise, as well in the rush hour traffic as you're walking down the freeway. Love is within us and within everything we meet. And then you say, ah, could I know that I'm here to keep my heart open in the midst of what is? So last Christmas, the neighbor lady gave Trey and myself a big amaryllis bulb, about this big, each one of us, and it was covered with gold wax on the bulb. And it was in a little bowl with some little red shavings. And she said, you don't have to plant this amaryllis. This amaryllis will grow and you'll never need to water it or anything because it's self-sustaining. So we put it in the east window, and these two bulbs sitting there next to each other both grew a little tippy-tippy thing of the amaryllis. That was last December. In July of this year, it hadn't done anything but this little bit. And Trey said, this is sick, David. I can feel the pain of this amaryllis bulb. He says, this bulb needs to be in dirt. It needs water. It needs sunshine. It doesn't need to be in this gold encasement on a little plate with some red shavings to look pretty, because we don't want to have the inconvenience of having to take care of the amaryllis. So he took down his trusty pair of scissors and he decided to destroy the gold tomb which held the bulb. And once he had cut off all the gold and it was lying on the dining room table, he thrust that bulb in my hand. He said, here, David, plant it and bring it back to life. Well, one of the bulbs he had severely massacred. The other one wasn't so badly massacred. And so I took it out to a beautiful sheltered place in the garden where it could get filtered light. And I planted one over here, resurrected Rita and resurrected Rebecca. And they're both in two different parts. And wouldn't you know it, this was maybe 3 weeks ago, whereas that little tip that was sitting out, all of a sudden, it grew. And here's that little tip, dark, dark green. It had been sitting for 6 months without any growth. And then the new part of it is lime green. It's so vital. It's so alive. It's like it had a resurrection. I almost called it Lazarus rising from the dead. Now, the one that he'd massacred is still trying to bring life back. And so in looking, I took Trey out to the garden. He says, look what you did. By your compassionate heart, concerned for a little gold-encased bulb, through your massacring of its sacred case, because she said, oh, you'll never need to take care of this because it's self-sustaining. He felt the suffering of the bulb. We put the bulb in the ground. The bulb is growing beautifully. Now, I have no attachment whether she'll bloom again, whether she'll survive the winter. But for now, it's a lesson in love, to let love lead the way, and then the law will make the way possible. And isn't it too nice to know that when you come in here, I'm literally cutting away whatever it is that's around your imprisoned splendor, and I'm planting you in a consciousness that wants to grow, because we're all the same if it's all one. And so what if that was a great teaching tool for me, Michael, that if each of us will let go of the stuff that is holding us bound and be willing to step into a totally foreign territory, there is inherent within us this knowing that will put down roots and that will give birth to a life that we were intended to have. Now that's the alchemy of love and light, taking dominion over its creation, and we are that. So it's so funny, when I entered into the Sufi lineage, they would say, it's not about you. And here's a religious scientist who thought it was all about me, manifesting the life that I wanted to get. And I was told that that person, that egoic overachiever, the perfectionist of David Leonard, had to surrender to something that was so much greater than him and invite it in to reveal itself, to express itself through surrender, not through control. And I did the dark side of the light chasers. I always do that with my ministerial class, Nancy, because I figured if they're going to be the light chasers, they got to first face their dark side. And you know, so many of the light chasers do not want to meet that dark side. You know why? Because it looks like that. So you're not going to tell me that I should want to go in and find my dark side? Until you meet your dark side, you can't know this side. And so what if, in meeting the dark side, you realize that the light was right there, inherent in the dark, but the dark comprehended it not? And so then the dark's engaged with the light, and you begin to have a whole different way of seeing life. So then the idea of not directing the law through a conscious willpower, but a surrendering to a love that, by its very nature, will help us grow into a whole new expression, like that little bulb out in the garden. Inherent within it, inherent within my sweet Ashley, is the same intelligence that that amaryllis has. And once I took that gold casing of its false sense of security and beauty away from it and gave it none of the crutches of the past, and it surrendered into the earth of life with the love of a watering can and the grace of the sunshine, inherent within it, inherent within all of us, is that which will restore us to sanity. So Raul, you want to play the mindfulness bell? And are we going to do the song at the end?
Yeah, I was thinking you want to do a different song.
Well, do you have a different song prepared? Oh, we can do This Little Light of Mine. We can all wing it. You like to wing it?
Yeah.
Fly by the Seat of David Leonard's Pants? I'm good. You're good. Okay, Raul. Thank you. The bell. For whom the bell tolls, Ernest Hemingway asks, to which he responds, the bell tolls for thee. And it's the bell that invites us to stop yet again, to turn within, and to smile, because there is that which is waiting for us, the breath within the breath, the peace that passes all understanding, the joie de vivre of life, the joy of life, just waiting for us. And so we take just a moment to return to the axis of love that moves through all creation. And when I find this awakening within me, it begins to see itself everywhere reflected in the world, because our world is a reflection of our consciousness. And so we take responsibility for who is looking through these eyes. Is it our controlling, egoic, confused self? Or is it this silence and this awareness, this curiosity of wonder. Could we invite that back into our field of awareness? This morning, I woke up at 4 and I got up because I couldn't sleep. And I went out to the front porch and I looked up to the sky in the south. And there was the moon, as huge and as shiny as she could be. And right next to her was the planet Venus, twinkling. And I found myself mesmerized by this light coming from the moon in the darkness, realizing that the moon is reflecting the sun, and it doesn't hold back its radiance. And then I heard that there is a radiance in all things, and that we are a reflection of the one light. And something in me began to smile, because the universe is showing us everywhere how we are one in this light, one in this love. I came home from Wednesday night satsang and I ended up turning on Nova, and I'm experiencing the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago. And as I'm watching it and tears are coming down my eyes, I remembered being there. And I remember telling Adam, I feel like I was at the beginning of creation. And then he smiled. I could feel it over the phone. Because if the one life awoke, it's not bound by time. So we come to experience the light and the love in an innocent sort of way. It was Jesus that said you must be like a child if you would enter this consciousness called heaven. A child has wonder. My prayer partner told me when he was a little boy, he remembers so clearly walking down the street and having a conversation with Jesus. But he said it was a Jesus that was a light. And he said, I never told anybody because they would think I was crazy. But he said it was that light as a little boy that called me to become a priest, a monk in particular. And it was that light, that love that awoke within me that had me leave the monastery and be in service to how this light would unfold in my life, how this love would emerge in my life. And so each of us is being given that gift of a calling. Something is calling you deeper than it's ever been before. And could we be humble enough to listen and courageous enough to surrender to it? The best definition I heard of surrender is surrender happens when you're not there. And so when the person who's trying to control and manipulate and fix the world is not running the show, then something, a hidden wholeness, can emerge to surprise us with its perception. And then we can sing a song like, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. In all traditions, they speak of that light. In the Muslim tradition, they say, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. In the Christian tradition, don't hide your light under the bushel, but let it shine. And so we get to experience this alchemy of the energy of the divine within us and all around us. And we potentiate it when two or more are gathered in this nature. I am there. The I am is there. So to this presence within and all around, I invite you to place your hand over your heart and say to this love and to this light, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you. You are the one life. You are the one love. You are the radiance of the universe, unfolding herself within and all around. And we witness you. With great thanks, we trust in this emergence. With playful creativity, we let it unfold. So it is. What?
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.